Turn in your Concordia Study Bible to page 1483. 1483. What you have there is something that I was hoping to get at sooner but didn't, but it's still a good thing to review now because these kinds of divisions still exist when we get to the book of Acts, where we're going for tomorrow. On the bottom of 1483, you have the various Jewish sects or parties, and I would like simply to lift out some things that distinguish them. For example, with the Pharisees, they did accept the Hebrew Scriptures plus the oral tradition. So you might underline, along with the Torah, they accepted the oral tradition in the third line. And as you look below, under the Sadducees, you notice they had a different viewpoint. Under point one, they denied the oral law. In other words, the traditions of the elders, they said, now it's not binding. And number eight, they accepted only the books of Moses, the Sadducees did. Okay? The rest of the Old Testament was considered irrelevant, not scripture. That was a big difference between the Pharisees and the Sadducees. On oral tradition, we can agree with the Sadducees that we don't accept the traditions of the elders either because Jesus had a problem with those. But we would agree with the Pharisees that we would take the Hebrew Scriptures, all of it, not just a small part of it like the Sadducees did. On number three, I'm not going to touch all these bases. Under the Pharisees, number three, they believed in angels and demons in their existence, yes. Different from the Sadducees, number six, they rejected the belief in angels and demons. This comes up in Acts 23 again when, you know, Paul divides the house on that point. Plus on another very important point, and that is the matter of the afterlife. Point number four on the Pharisees, they believed in the future of the dead. In other words, the resurrection of the body. They believed in that and the immortality of the soul, number five. But with the Sadducees, number five, there is neither resurrection of the dead or a future life. Okay, the Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection. And Jesus had to persuade them on that point when he talked about the woman who had seven husbands, then he referred to the book of Exodus, which is in their Bible, and he convicted them on the point from their Bible, which is only five books, okay? All right, enough of that. We could talk more, but I don't want to clutter your minds too much. I already do that anyway. On the Essenes, you will notice that they're described here as being very pious people like the Pharisees, but they separated from the temple, unlike the Pharisees, and they were even stricter on some ways than the Pharisees, but they separated from the temple. This has to be focused on and repeated. Point number one and two, yes, they had purity laws. They kept them. Most of them went to the wilderness to live and lived in private or, you know, small communities. They studied the scriptures there, number four. And they worshiped daily. They were very pious. Number seven, they didn't marry very often. Many of them didn't marry at all. They wanted to avoid it, but some of them could if they wanted to. So they eventually died out, which is no big surprise. Okay. Well, you know the laws of biology, right? Okay. On the Zealots. The Zealots were Zealotic. In other words, they were very zealous about getting rid of the Romans. And Simon the Zealot was one of the disciples of Jesus. The Zealots ceased to exist after Masada when the Romans totally did end the Jewish state in the year 73. So that's what's pointed out there. Number one, they would not want to pay taxes to a pagan emperor because they owed allegiance only to God. Then there's one that's not listed. You can write in at the bottom of the page, the Herodians, H-E-R-O-D-I-A-N-S, the Herodians. And we've heard about them in the gospel on a number of occasions. And these were basically people who, like Herod, thought that it was okay to collaborate with the Romans. You know, if you can't beat them, join them. That was basically Herod's philosophy. Herod actually went one step further. If you can't beat him, join him and hopefully take advantage, which Herod usually did. All right, so the Herodians didn't have a problem with the Romans because the Romans brought peace to the land and allowed a kind of security that they wouldn't have had otherwise. All right, there's a big need on my part to get you to map number 8 and 9 in the back of the book. And there are a couple other lists that we might look at, but let's look at map 8 and 9 on the back of the book of your CSB Bible. Let's look at number 9 first, because there's a lot of cities here. This includes many of the major cities of Jesus' ministry. And a while ago when we had this little oral quiz here in which some of you starred, not all of you, but some of you starred, we had a little trouble figuring out where these different parts of the land were. You see Judea in the south, which is around Jerusalem, and Samaria in the middle. Sychar, Mount Gerizim are in Samaria. And then in the north, around the Sea of Galilee, this is called Galilee. That's why it's called Sea of Galilee, the Sea of Gennesaret, the Sea of Tiberias. It had all those names because Tiberias is on the sea, and it's the major city on the sea, Tiberias. So those are the three main regions. Some of the smaller regions, Perea, which is along the east edge of the Jordan River, right above the Dead Sea and extending northward toward the Decapolis, Herod Antipas, who also ruled Galilee, ruled also over Perea. And Philip, the brother of Herod Antipas, ruled over the region around Caesarea Philippi up in the north and southward to the region east of the Sea of Galilee. So those are the three sons of Herod who took over. Now, some of the main cities that you really need to be able to place in your mind's eye would be Capernaum, which is on the north edge of the Sea of Galilee, where Jesus headquartered during his public ministry. And, of course, you want to know about Cana, where he changed water into wine. Where was that? Well, you go toward the Mediterranean, halfway between the Sea of Galilee and the Mediterranean is Cana. And directly south of it is Nazareth, where Jesus was, where he grew up as a young lad, where Mary and Joseph lived, Nazareth. So those are key cities to be able to place. And, of course, you want to know that Sychar is in Samaria, where Jacob's well was. And you want to know, of course, that Jerusalem is down in the south, and Bethany is just to the east of it, and Bethlehem is just to the south of it, just a very short distance away, only about, well, it used to be 8 miles. Now those two cities are almost interconnected because things have, you know, been built up in between the two. And Emmaus, you see where the question mark is to the west of Jerusalem? They haven't been able to put it exactly on the map, but it's about there, a few miles to the west of Jerusalem. This is where the two disciples were walking after the resurrection, and Jesus joins them on the way, according to Luke 24. Well, Sea of Galilee, you know where that is. It's where Jesus did his public ministry. You know where the Jordan River is. It actually extends all the way from Mount Hermon through the Sea of Galilee and all the way down to the Dead Sea. Today, the Sea of Galilee, well, I don't need to tell you all this stuff because it's not going to be on the test, right? Anyway, a lot of the water from the Sea of Galilee no longer flows into the Jordan River because they have diverted it with aqueducts along the west coast and taken it down to the Negev, the south region, and made that bloom. So irrigation happens down there from the waters of the Sea of Galilee, and it doesn't all go down to the Dead Sea anymore. Well, of course, the people on the other side of the Jordan like to have some of the water, too. Let's go back to map number 8, previous page. We've looked at it before, but you'll notice the pink is the city of Jerusalem in the time of Jesus, and the wall was around at this location where you see the pink. Okay? Maybe I should put this on the screen so you have it before you, but it's pretty obvious. Pardon?
There's One quick thing. I just noticed that for some reason our version
yeah.
of the Concordia Study Bible has these labeled as 10 and 11, the ones that you're looking at, 8 and 9.
Okay, that's helpful for some to know if you have a different Bible from the one I have. So you have pages 10 and 11 instead of 8 and 9. Okay, so this is what we're looking at here, and adjust your pages accordingly. And we were referring to where Jesus spent the time with his disciples, probably in this part of the city, which is the farthest part away from the temple. Do I have to move it over a little bit? Thank you so much. I need to be told when I miss cue, otherwise I won't correct it. Thank you so much. All right, so here is probably where the Last Supper was taken, far away from the temple, so Jesus could have some peace and quiet with his disciples on this night where he needed to spend a few hours. And then later he would retreat along here, outside the city, to the Garden of Gethsemane, where he would often spend a night with his disciples, and where also later he was captured down here below the temple area is the Garden of Gethsemane. Today there are still some olive trees there that date back to the first or second century. This is where the temple is, of course, and this is where Jesus was buried in all likelihood outside of the city then. Today the city walls enclose this area, but in Jesus' time it did not. So those are just a few things you might keep in mind from that map. With that, I'm going to close the book.